Hello, everybody. This is Walt Blackman, and welcome to the Walt Blackman Show. I hope you had a great weekend. Today's Tuesday, and we are talking about Arizona correctional system, any criminal justice system in Arizona. So sit back, grab mama, put the babies to bed, and welcome to the No PC Zone on the Walt Blackman Show. Hello, everybody. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you're having even a better Tuesday. I want to welcome you to the Walt Blackman Show because today we're going to be talking about something that rarely gets heard of, and this is the criminal justice system in Arizona. As you know, many of you know that I am chair of the Criminal Justice Reform Committee in Arizona and the Arizona House of Representatives, and in that role, our committee, we have put together some comprehensive criminal justice reform in Arizona, but we've got a long way to go, and we've got some things that I want to talk to you about the criminal justice system in Arizona, about what we are doing, and also about some of the challenges that we have when we are trying to move this bipartisan piece of legislation, or pieces of legislation, through the Arizona House and to the Arizona Senate. So a little bit of history about sentencing in Arizona. Many people already know this and some don't. So this is actually directed to those who really don't know the system and sentencing. Now in Arizona, we've got a sentence program called Truth in Sentencing. That is actually mandated sentence, mandatory sentencing. So a lot of states have that. They have mandatory sentencing. Now this basically came to be back in the early 90s under the Clinton administration. And you know what happened then? He wrote he signed a crime bill, which was authored by no other than our current president, President Biden. Now, what it did, it took sweeping changes to the criminal justice system across the country, and a lot of states began to follow suit of what the federal government was doing. So what they did, they made their sentencing quite harsh. Now, I want to make something clear about criminal justice reform and where I am in my position on the whole thing. Number one, victim focused is first. That means we got to make sure we're taking care of our victims. We have to make sure that those victims receive their restitution. We need to make sure that victims have their day in court and that they are taken care of by the programs that we have out there. So number one, victim focus is first. Community safety is also paramount in this criminal justice reform that I am taking part of, and also working with other people around the state and country about criminal justice reform. Now, I want folks to understand this. If you commit a crime in Arizona, then you should be locked up if that crime warrants that type of sentence. If you go out and commit a murder, if you go out and commit a robbery, if you go out and commit an assault, you should be consequenced for that act of violence or that crime that you've committed. The legislation that I've been passing and writing and moving forward for the past 3 years is the type of legislation that Arizona needs. And when we talk about making sure that victims are safe, communities are safe, making sure that restitution is paid, we also have a responsibility to make sure that our prison systems that we manage through legislation are run correctly. We also need to make sure that our judicial systems that are managed through legislation in the Arizona House of Representatives and the Senate are managed properly. Now, we've got a lot of great judges in Arizona, a lot of great folks that practice law, a lot of great prosecutors, a lot of great folks that defend these men and women that find themselves in front of a judge. The problem is not the people that are executing the legislation. The part that is troublesome to a lot of folks is the type of laws that we have in Arizona. Now, we have the harshest sentencing laws in the country. We have a system called truth in sentencing, better known as mandatory minimums. And mandatory minimums came to be during the Clinton administration. Now, President Biden, then Senator Biden, was responsible for writing a bill called the Crime Bill. And in that bill, what he did, it took sweeping reforms in criminal justice to lock people up for longer amounts of time with smaller, minor criminal justice or criminal or crimes that were committed. So particularly the largest population that got swooped up in a lot of those arrests and arraignments and also sentencing were folks with drug crimes. The problem with some of that is that you cannot treat an addict in a program or a system that doesn't have the correct programs to fix the problem. And that is what we have here in Arizona. Also in truth in sentencing and mandatory sentencing, judges do not have the discretions that they need to be able to properly not litigate, but make decisions on the particular case that's in front of them. Now, the reasoning for this in Arizona to take away a lot of just discretion from judges, because there were some that authored the truth in sentencing that thought that they were smarter than judge or thought judges or thought that prosecutors were smarter than judges or what have you. The problem with that is because of the truth in sentencing, the mandatory minimums, judges were hamstrung to basically a chart of how they could sentence someone to a crime. And then we run into the part of repetitive sentencing. And repetitive sentencing is basically nothing more than charges that are stacked. So, for example, and this is an extreme that I am talking about. If a person steals an automobile and the person is the lone person that has stolen that automobile, let's say they stop and get out and put some gas in the vehicle or, I don't know, buy a soda at a store. They get back in that car and they drive on and they get out somewhere else and they get back in the vehicle. Those are multiple auto thefts. So while you might hear when prosecutors say that they typically give probation to first-time offenders, that is true to a certain extent, except in the example that I made, because the multiple times that the person got in and out of the vehicle, every time the person got in the vehicle was again stolen. Now, that's an extreme example of stacking charges or being repetitive. Now, when most people think of repetitive crimes, they think of a series of crimes that take place during a crime spree. That's also one that is used. However, typically in Arizona, we see the lower end drug offenses that folks are getting charged with and also arraigned and sentenced with. Now, you may think that a lot of folks choose to go to court, have a trial when they are trying to defend themselves or answer to their crimes. What typically happens is we have a high percent of plea bargaining. So here's another situation. Let's take the same person. He gets caught or she gets caught. They have drugs in the vehicle. They have a stolen vehicle. That's already a mandatory felony somewhere where the judge has to kind of go down a chart. But before the judges get to that point, prosecutors will often offer a deal to the person. Now, if a person is sitting in front of a prosecutor and the prosecutor says, well, you take this plea, or let me be more polite. We are going to offer you a plea of 8 years, or we go to court and you will lose and we'll send you to prison for 20 to 25 years. 8 years seems to look a lot more better. A lot better to some people. So we have a high percentage of folks that plea out. And in some cases, some of these plea bargains are kind of pushed on some of these folks. Now, the system, the judicial system is going to say, no, that doesn't happen. It's not pushed. They have a choice, yada, yada, yada. And that is true to a certain extent. But a lot of the prosecutors are trying to get through a heavy caseload. And if they can have somebody plead out rather than go to trial, that only lessens their caseload and it gets the person off the street, which that person should be off the streets because they stole the car and they did whatever. What we don't have, though, is judicial discretion in Arizona. So let's take that same person. And let's look at the drug aspect of the crime that was committed. And let's say it was a simple possession of a controlled substance that turned around to be illegal. Now, let's also peel the onion back on this particular person that this person that we are coming up that I am just talking about. And they are a habitual drug offender. They use drugs in the past. They are basically addicts and held in bondage to the drug that they are using. So they are serial drug offenders. And again, they are possession charges. What we see, if there are multiple arrests with the person who has committed the crime of possession, that judge has to sentence that individual to prison. In a lot of cases, when we are using truth in sentencing or mandatory minimums. Now, if a person is standing, if I'm a judge and I have this person that is standing in front of me and I am looking through their history, and I see that this person has multiple drug offenses, not selling, not manufacturing these drugs, but using. And based on when that person is using, that's when they get into most trouble. If I am looking at a case and I see that this person is a serial drug offender, I should have the discretion, or judges should have the discretion, to either put this person in an intense drug treatment program or put this person in a program that is mandatory to help this drug addiction. Because at the end of the day, what we want to do is make sure that we do not have a repetitive or a revolving door of people in and out of prison. So that's the current system that we have in Arizona. Now, last year I wrote a bill, HB 2808, which is earned release credits. And of course, because of the COVID, everything shut down to include a lot of bills. So this year I brought a bill back. I brought earned release credits, HB 2713. And the reference title for folks is release credits prisoners. Now, again, as I go through some of the things in this bill, I want you to know where I stand with crime. I am one that is tough on crime, but we have to be smart on reform. And that's where we're not smart at. That's where we are dropping the ball in Arizona, because our reform system or our rehabilitation systems are inadequate at best. And a lot of that is having to do with a shortage of personnel in our DOC, a shortage of programs, and also a shortage of partnerships that you may see in Arizona. Partnerships, like we have some partners like Sage, and they work with folks coming out of prison. We have folks like the Salvation Army. I got Jeff Taylor, who is a phenomenal individual when we are talking about rehabilitation, we are talking about second chances, and also as a mentor to some of these folks who get out of prison. And then later on, I'm going to have Jeff Taylor on my show, and we're going to be talking about some of the programming that we have and the lack of programming that we have and program that we need. So what Earned Release Credit does, well, first of all, let me talk about who is eligible for Earned Release Credit. Now, first of all, if a person is a violent or dangerous offender, someone who has been charged as a violent or dangerous character, they are not eligible for my bill. So, if person number one, who is a criminal, goes out and does something that is lewd, that hurts another person, that hurts a child, rape, that incest, anything that hurts someone physically, or really just speaks to the manner of heinous crimes, they are not eligible under my bill. Now, if you look at my bill on page 5, section 33, a person who is serving a sentence of a drug offense, they cannot be serving a sentence for or had previously been convicted of an aggravated offense or felony against a child covered under 13-706. 13-706 defines a dangerous crime. Dangerous crimes against children are defined in 13-705, and other crimes fall up under that. Now, a person who is serving under that does not qualify for this type of programming, this type of bill. So this, anyone who does anything that's in that category of 13-705 or 13-706, dangerous crime against children, or as defined in 13-705, or has any previous convictions for an offense committed in any other jurisdiction in this state, they are not eligible for this piece of legislation. Now, Earned Release Credits is not just about somebody sitting in their cell being quiet and not participating. Let's take this drug offender that we talked about earlier. There are a multitude of treatments that the person has to successfully complete before they are able to take part in this type of legislation, in my legislation. So they need to complete drug and substance abuse treatment programs, educational programs, psychoeducational programs, vocational programs, skilled-based work programs, reentry programs, and other major self-improvement programs that provide an opportunity for the person to succeed and provided by the department during that prisoner's term of imprisonment. What does that mean? That means that Joe Blow can't sit around and expect to earn earned release credit. What happens is that same person has to work to get out. Now, I have also accompanied with this piece of legislation, transition programming, that I'm going to be talking later on with Jeff Taylor about programs like SAGE and YMCA and reentry program. Now, what the narrative is from some criminal justice hawks is that this bill, my bill, HB 2713, is retroactive, and they don't like that. Well, let me be clear. The bill is not retroactive. What the bill is that if a person takes one of those self-improvement classes that I was talking about earlier, the person doesn't have to take the class again because they've successfully completed that class. Think of yourself in, I don't know, college, and you've taken a math class, and there's a new criteria for graduation that came into effect after you enrolled, after you took that math class. And then that new criteria says any math class you took does not count. That in itself would piss a person off. This is under the same manner. If a person completes a self-improvement class, then a person does not need to take that class again because it doesn't make sense. That's the first thing. And number two, let's say we did that. Let's say in the bill it says that if you took a self-improvement class, educational programming, substance abuse, so on and so forth, and you are trying to find out if you are qualified for this bill, HB 2713, and then the counselor says, no, you're not qualified, but the person took the class, but you're still not qualified. And then you have some new person that comes in that takes the class. That's going to cause friction amongst prisoners, which could, in fact, make the environment more dangerous. Now that's a hypothetical that I've been kind of having go around in my head. It just doesn't make sense to me to have a person take a class over if they successfully completed a class as part of their self-improvement. We shouldn't do that. So therefore, we're not going to do that. And a lot of people are against that. Now, we've got one particular person, this guy named Steve Twist. He is the author of Mandatory Sentencing and Mandatory Minimums and Truth in Sentencing, who is avidly against any type of earned release credit. Now, he is a victim advocate supporter, and he works with victims a lot. And my hat is off to Mr. Twist for doing that, advocating for victims, because that's important that we do that. My hat's also off to Mr. Twist because during a time when crime rates were skyrocketing in the 90s, he came up with Truth in Sentencing. He came up with the mandatory sentencing based on the crime laws that Biden and others in D.C. blessed off on. But ladies and gentlemen, Truth in Sentencing was written over 20 years ago in Arizona. And we have not seen a significant drop in crime based on the data that comes from Truth in Sentencing or mandatory sentencing. We have not seen that. We have not seen a drop in recidivism, returning back to prison, based on truth in sentencing. So there needs to be a change. Also, Mr. Twist thinks that individuals who commit crimes that fall up under 705 and 706, as I explained, will be eligible for earned release credit. And as we know, as I pointed out, those who fall up under those crimes are not eligible for this type of legislation. And they are not eligible to even be released under any type of earned release credit that is part of the DOC program, because they fall under those serious crimes. And this bill is not directed to those types of folks. Now, this bill also, outside of earned release credit, this bill talks to the reduction of recidivism. It also talks to the restoration of credits that a person may try or have, if you will. So it's one day for every 6 days. So let me break that down. One day for every 6 days. So a person serves one day, and they get that credit for every 6 days. So they get one day for credit, and after they have served 6 days. And once they successfully complete all the programming, they complete the educational programming, the psychoeducational program, the vocational program, the skills-based work program, the reentry programs, and other major self-improvement programs provided by the department during their stay, they do that successfully, then they are eligible for this earned release credit, unless they, again, I will say it again, not serving a sentence for or have been previously sentenced to a serious offense under 13705 and 13706, a dangerous crime against children, as defined in those sections. Now, Mr. Twist has put out a list of the very crimes that fall under 13705 and says that this bill, HB 2713, does not apply to those personnel when the bill clearly says that. So why do I say that? Because we've got people that don't want to see criminal justice reform take any shape in Arizona. We've got people in Arizona that want to lock the door and throw away the key on a lot of these folks. Now, here's the problem with that. Here's the problem that I see with that, is that when we lock the door and throw away the key and don't provide the programming that these folks need, they are going to get out of prison. That is why right now, within 3 years, we see an uptick of folks returning to prison because they don't have the programming. And I often said to my colleagues that we cannot stand idly by, lock people up, throw away the key, and expect for them to be any better when they come out if we do not offer the type of programs they need to stay out of prisons. These people are coming back to our communities. Now, another bill I wrote was the ombudsman. Now, with the ombudsman bill, oversight of corrections, what that does, it takes a good hard look at what's going on in our prison systems, because the prison system right now has no overwatch. They watch themselves. To me, that's like telling your kid to go clean their room and then sending them back to check it. That's not oversight. What that is the system checking itself. Now, first of all, I want to say this about the director of DOC. The last director of DOC, I got it. This guy had been there for years. He just did not. I wasn't very impressed with how he ran the prison. The new guy we got, Director Sines, is from the feds, and he ran a lot of federal prisons. Now, Director Sines has been in there for about 3 years. And two things are happening when you have a department that large. It gets 62% of our budget when we're talking about corrections that come out of the general funds. That is a large organization to have. And there were a lot of problems with DOC long before Director Sines got into that position. And what really bothers me is when I hear on the news people beating him up because things have not changed in DOC. Let me tell some folks why some things have not changed. Now, the bill I'm talking about, the Oversight Committee, is HB 2167, Independent Corrections Ombudsman, Oversight Committee. That bill passed out of criminal justice reform, and it also should be ready to go to the floor. Now, back to Director Sines. He took over the prison. The prison was a mess. And folks expected him to turn that stuff around lickety-split. Turning that around is like trying to stop an aircraft carrier on a dime and turn it 360 degrees. That is next to impossible, ladies and gentlemen. So I would ask, let's give Director Sines a break. Because I have spoken with Director Sines on many occasions, and he is doing his utmost to try to change the system. But the problem we have in these types of programs, a bureaucracy, we have career employees that will just use the status quo in our systems, and particularly Department of Corrections of Arizona. We've got people that have been there for years that don't want to change. They like the way things are running. So Director Sines may give a task out to change something or to increase a program or what have you. And then you have those career folks that will either just blow them off or just do the bare minimum, where things seem to look the same. Now, what this bill does, 2167, the Oversight Committee, it takes another look at our system. And it's not DOC looking at itself. Now, some of the things that the committee is going to be looking at, they're going to be looking at livable temperatures in prison. So why do I say that first? So if you live in Arizona, you know, it gets up to about 100 degrees. And some of these units have swamp coolers trying to cool the prison. And that's not good, particularly when folks are living in tight spaces, as they are. So some of the things we're going to be looking at: livable temperatures in prisons, physical or sexual abuse from fellow inmates, physical or sexual abuse from department staff or contractors, credible threats against an inmate or from other inmates, neglect of prison staff, denial of rights afforded to inmates under the federal or state law that we have right now, access to visitation and communications with family, and legal representation. As we know, in COVID right now, a lot of folks cannot communicate with those folks that are in prison because of COVID, access to mental or mental health care or substance abuse, and this goes along to the treatment programs that my other bill speaks to, access to educational and rehabilitative programming, drug and mental health treatment, job and vocational training, to make sure these things are happening. This is what this committee does. And it also access to the Department Administrative Remedies to process these types of issues to turn things around. What this means, this is a tool for DOC to turn themselves around, a tool for the director to turn this around in Arizona. Now, why do we need this? Well, for a number of reasons. In the past, we've seen that a DOC has had so many problems, from personnel to locks not being, I don't know, bod, replaced. Just a myriad of issues that we have seen in DOC. And I just want to go through some of those right now, of some of the issues that we see in DOC that happened over the past and may still be happening. Play, Clay.
There's a staffing crisis that's going on inside of Arizona's prisons. It's a physically and mentally grueling job, and Arizona corrections officers are among the lowest paid law enforcement officers in the state.
According to the Department of Corrections, nearly a fifth of all officer positions are now vacant across the state's 10 prison complexes. That is more than 1,200 jobs.
Vacancies. Now, what does that do right there? So the Ombudsman Oversight Committee sees that as a problem. So what's the problem? It's lack of personnel because of pay. Now, last year we gave DOC a pay raise, but it still has not gotten up to the national average. So it endangers people that work in the prison system. So this Ombudsman is not just about watching out what's going on with these prisoners. This Ombudsman Committee looks for ways to protect staff, to look at staffing and personnel. Play clip.
The problems inside our prisons started coming to light after broken locks on cell doors led to assaults on officers.
Tonight, Team 12's Michael Doudna is looking into the problem that has led to the largest overtime bill in the state. Michael?
Yeah, that's right, guys. 62% of all the overtime paid out by the state came from one department, the Department of Corrections.
There's always fear.
For corrections officer Clinton Roberts, his job is not an easy one. Last month, some of the challenges went public. Video surfacing of doors with broken locks allowing inmates to assault officers.
Now, we know last year we had the problem with the locks. Now, DOC budget is close to $2 billion. $2 billion the DOC receives, and for a long time they did not restore their locks. And then as a result of that, staff were attacked, inmates were attacked. Those are some of the things that the Ombudsman is going to be able to watch and report back to the House of Representatives and the Senate. Play clip.
In there, there's always a risk.
Adding to the challenges is a system where the Department of Corrections has more than 1,200 open jobs. So some officers work long hours to pick up the slack.
1,200 open jobs, ladies and gentlemen. 1,200 open jobs in the Department of Corrections. Now, mind you, this interview was a year ago. What are the current openings and vacancies in DOC now? I'm not going to put a number out because I just don't know. However, if conditions were that bad just a year ago, just 12 months ago, Do you think that they have fulfilled their personnel strength requirement? If they have not seen a reasonable pay raise and the conditions are the same? No, they probably haven't. And the problem that I see with this is when we don't take care of staff that work in these types of environments, prisoners begin to suffer more than typically. Now, I'm not saying it should be a walk in the park when somebody is in prison. I am not saying that. And I'm not saying that, you know, they should be able to have marshmallows and fluffy time. That's not what I am saying. What I am saying is we have a responsibility as legislators to not only protect the community, but we need to protect personnel that are working in the prisons. We need to make sure that they are okay to go to work, that they don't have these large vacancies of job where they have to work overtime. And then when they're working overtime, they are tired because they have worked so much overtime. Play clip.
Extremely stressful. It changes the officers.
According to the state, the department spent more than $40 million in overtime alone in FY18.
We spent over $40 million in overtime. Now let's think about that. $40 million. The direct cost is $42 million in overtime to the Department of Corrections. What do you think $42 million could go to? $42 million, when we're just talking about the Department of Corrections, can go to, I don't know, paying staff what they are worth, making sure that programmings that are mandated are actually being funded, making sure that we have the right people to work there. And also, let's think about this. $42 million, do you think that we could probably look at putting some of that back in our education, K through 12? We got folks that are always complaining about education and that we are not funding education, but we are spending $42 million alone in overtime to the DOC. Because we haven't adequately looked at the programs or looked at the system to see that it's broke. But we know it's broken. We know that the DOC is broken because it's all over the news all the time. We know that the DOC is not operating at its full capacity because it is broken. Because we are not doing the right things in that. Now, the oversight bill looks to that. It looks to a system that is broken to try to fix it. Play clip.
62% of all the overtime spent by the state that year, and those hours it takes to make up that money adds up.
It's physically and emotionally draining.
The problem here at its core is retention. The DOC is constantly hiring, but it's also constantly losing officers.
Now, I want to make a correction. I said 62% of the budget on DOC. That is incorrect. That is incorrect. What I meant to say was 62% of the overtime paid to state employees, that's what they get. So $42 million is 62%. Of the total overtime that DOC gets that the state has to pay for. We also need to look at retention. Now, we gave them a measly pay raise last year, but they are not staying. And I mean, I wouldn't stay in that situation. But we really don't know all that's going on in there because we are not looking in there. And the Ombudsman Oversight Committee is able to do that. Now, some people think that the Ombudsman Oversight Committee is authorized to make changes in the DOC. They're not. What they do is give recommendations based on their findings to the Arizona House of Representatives and to the Arizona Senate. So those two bodies can make laws or do appropriations accordingly for DOC. Play clip.
other law enforcement agencies, which can at times offer better pay and better conditions.
There was 137 of just our Department of Corrections employees that were in the process waiting for a phone call to go to Maricopa County Sheriff's Office.
A new state budget may provide some now, relief. With
132 people were waiting for other jobs. 132. Now, oftentimes, when you look at that, if a large group of people are leaving at an increased rate of time, over an increased rate of time, that's a red light right there. That's cause for concern. But for many years, all we have done was put people in danger, staff, administrative personnel, and also we have jammed these prisons with people based under truth and sentencing with no real way out. That means these people had to serve 85% of their time before they were eligible to leave to serve the extra 15% somewhere else. Now, what people don't understand is that with the ombudsman and the other bill, the earned release credit bill that I am running, this is the basic, the fundamentals to be able to run these programs the way this should be ran. When we have, well, before COVID started out, a little over 42,000 prisoners were housed in our correctional facilities. Number four in the country. Now, after COVID, we're somewhere hovering around 38,000 at the tune of $25,000 a day. $25,000 a day spent out of taxpayer dollars to fund programs that are broke. But we continually hang on to a sentencing system that puts these people in jail, takes away discretion from judicials or judges, and continually we expect to have a better outcome at the end of the day. That's like Stevie Wonder getting in a car hoping that he can make it to the store without running in the back of somebody. It doesn't make sense, ladies and gentlemen. It does not make sense to continue down a road that is already broken. But what I can't understand are those folks, those few people in our state that don't want to see change, that says everything is okay. There's nothing wrong with the program. Now, either those people are blind and don't see it, or either they don't want to see it. I think that a lot of people, to include the author of Earned Release Credits, who has done a lot, is too close to this agenda, to this issue, to where they cannot look at it objectively. Now, I'm one for victim advocacy first. But I can look at this system and look at the cost of this program, this beast that we are funding every single year, year after year, when we see no improvements. I'm able to look at this objectively and say, you know what? There is something going on here that we need to take a good look at. So that's why last summer I ran the criminal justice I ran the ad hoc committee on criminal justice reform. And what do you know, ladies and gentlemen? The same issues that have been going on for years in the Arizona House and the Arizona prison systems came to light in this ad hoc committee. That's why I ran HB 2808. But wouldn't you know, there were people who did not want to see that bill make it because they wanted business as usual. They wanted to lock the key under a mat after they slammed the door and walk away from a system. That's like your kid cleaning their room and moving all the trash up underneath their bed and walking away and hoping that when they come back, the trash is gone. If I don't look at it, it's not there. And we have a lot of people in our state that are doing that. We have a lot of people in our state that are looking at the problems in our correctional system and turning their backs and saying, it's really not there. It's really not a problem. I will tell you, it would probably be a big problem if they themselves were sitting in those cells. Now, again, there are people that belong in our DOC. No question about it. We've got people that have no business being on the street. They don't. They have no business being on the street because they have committed crimes that are just heinous. But then we got that group of people that'll be captured, pun intended, under my earned release credit, non-dangerous, non-violent, drug addictive, needing programs that we are going to surround with these types of legislation. And there is a myriad of legislation that I am running to try to fix this system, this broken system that we have. There's another bill that I am running. It's 2163, Prisoners Discharge Transition Program. Now, DOC has somewhat of a program already. But it obviously is not working because these folks get out of prison. Matter of fact, let me tell you a story that happened last week. I was with dinner. Matter of fact, we were having dinner with a former Congress person. And I'm not going to say his name on the airs here because I didn't get his permission. But we were having dinner with this person. And as we were leaving the restaurant, there was a young man who walked up on us, a young black American. And he was holding a trash bag. And he was obviously walking, getting out of some sort of center just released. And in fact, he was just released. He told us he was just released. So here's this person who was walking around Phoenix with a plastic bag that was just that was released out of our systems, one of our systems. No money, nothing, and just turned out. And you can tell that the person that he was desperate. So the programs that we currently have right now are obviously not working. There is much more that needs to be done. And these bills that I am running, like HB 2164, Coordinated Reentry Planning Services Program. Now let's take that same young man and let's back up 6 months. See, right now, when a person's getting ready to go, they say they do at least 3 months. And I think that's bullshit. I really don't think they really do intense programming or transitioning programming and 3 months. That's bullshit because what I've seen, what's coming out of there. Okay. I've seen what's coming out of there and I've spoken with a lot of folks that have been released and it's not 3 months. It's basically, sometimes they're lucky. They are lucky to get 30 days of transitioning programs. But what this bill does, 2164, it goes back not 3 months, but it goes back 6 months. That's when they start to do the actual hands-on transitioning. But we need to get to the mindset in our prison systems that when a person enters the front door of our criminal justice system, that is when we work on transition. Now, when I say the front door, I'm not talking the front door to DOC. I'm talking the front door to our criminal justice system. So we have somebody that's going through the county jail system, which 100% of those individuals that end up in our DOC come out of the county jails. But there is a large percentage of those people that come out of our county jail systems to the DOC that don't need to be in our DOC system because they are probably have some psychological or mental issues that should be adjusted, or drug-related issues that should be adjusted that are not addressed. So they end up in our DOCs. And when they get to the DOCs, there is usually a waiting list for these folks to get into these programs. And I don't care what anybody tells me. I've seen and heard a lot of testimonies from some of these folks that work in the programming, and those are some great people. The program manager for reentry program and programming for the DOC is a wonderful person. She works hard, but she doesn't have the resources or the personnel that she needs to have these great programs. So these people come out of these programs, they go into the DOC not being properly assessed, thrown into a situation where resources are limited, and then they go through the system, and we expect these people to come out better. And that's another show when we're talking about what happens to these people when they get out of prisons, the challenges that they have. And that's our DOC. That's our system that we have now. That's a broken system. That's a system that for years has operated under the umbrella of failure, ladies and gentlemen. So that's why the bills that I have written for criminal justice reform, the committees that I have heard are sat on for reform, that's why it's important that these changes come to be. It's not going to be overnight. The first step to this is, what did they say? They say the first step to knowing that you have a problem is admitting you have a problem. We have a problem in Arizona, ladies and gentlemen, with our DOC. We have a problem with a lot of the problems that come out of it. And what we tend to do, ladies and gentlemen, is look the other way. This is Walt Blackman, and this is The Walt Blackman Show. And I hope you enjoyed some of the information that I gave you about our criminal justice system and what we are trying to do for reform. Stay tuned this week, Wednesday, at Criminal Justice Reform Committee, HB 2713, release credits for prisoners will be on the docket. And if you want to follow that bill, you want to watch how it goes, you can go to www.azledge.gov and you can click on the live feed and you will be part of history. This is Walt Blackman. Have a great week. And understand that this is the No PC Zone.